I'm Jody, the mom.
And I'm Dr. Barr, the doc.
And this is Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas.
We bring together the mom experience and the doc expertise to give you the information and tools you need to help make the next right decision to get your child back.
Let's dive in. Hi there, it's Jody, the mom side of Mom and Doc Talk. Dr. Barr and I are taking a short summer break to soak up some family time, and we hope you are too. While we're away, we're bringing back some of your favorite episodes, especially powerful stories from parents who've been where you are and found their way forward with homeopathy. We hope these episodes give you a little extra hope and a reminder that healing is possible. The Mom and Doc Talk podcast is brought to you by Resilience Naturopathic, a team of naturopathic doctors specializing in helping children with PANS pandas heal through classical homeopathy. Our providers are supported by a team made up largely of PANS parents, so we truly understand what you are going through. We work with families around the world and are determined to change how PANS families experience healthcare. You can learn more about us at resiliencenaturopathic.com. Enjoy the episode.
In this episode, we're going to be talking about some things that might be a little hard for some people to hear because there might be some traumatic events that are discussed that could be problematic for some people. So just listen carefully if this is one that you might have concerns about, whether it would impact you negatively, or if you really think that it might not be so great for you, go ahead and skip it until you're ready for it at another time. Today is the day where I get vulnerable and I share my story. And the reason that we're doing this, like I don't really necessarily want the attention on me, but Jody nudged me and she said that it's actually quite important because my story is part of why she trusted me. And it's part of why literally thousands of people trust me for the advice and recommendations and feedback that I give on a regular basis in our Facebook group.
I hate that I constantly am asking, like anytime you start talking about your story, I'm like, yes, like go, like talk about it. I think that it is such an important part of the whole story and why you were the one that was supposed to do this really large thing that you're doing for the PANS and PANDAS community. Like your firsthand experience makes you again, I said it before, it's your life like set you up for us. And I just love hearing your story.
So it's always a hard place for me to figure out where to start because the truth is my story where it started that Jody heard started at 16 because I didn't realize that all of the things that I had dealt with when I was younger were part of what led to the story that I did share. Because the story that I shared in the past was incomplete, but it was about bipolar disorder because that's the diagnosis I was ultimately given as an adult who had episodic flares of behavioral and neurological symptoms. Jody, where do you think I should start? Do you think I should start at the actual beginning? Or do you think I should start at my journey of my symptoms and then my eventual understanding of what was actually happening?
Start at the very beginning.
The very beginning. Okay. So what I now understand to be part of my overall picture, my first remembrance or my first recollection of it was probably in elementary school where I had always been like a pretty easygoing, relatively outgoing kid with maybe a little bit of like shyness that would show up here and there, like happens for most kids in like a very brand new situation. But I had a sudden like really intense, so like severe episode of separation anxiety that I had never had when I was getting ready to start kindergarten. My parents will still talk to this day about that episode because it was so unlike me and it was stood out so much compared to the rest of my class. So everybody went for our orientation and we were all coming together. Parents were coming in and they wanted the kids to go sit on the carpet to do like a circle time, sort of have a story read to us. And I freaked out and clung to my mother and refused to go. Every other kid went. I didn't. I clung to her and refused to go sit on that carpet. Fortunately, this was a very brief episode, but it was severe enough that my dad stayed home from work my first day of school because they didn't think I was going to get on the bus and they thought that they were going to have to drive me to school. So they had my dad stayed home so he could stay with my brothers and my mom could take me to school. And she anticipated dragging me in, kicking and screaming and having like a horrible scene. Fortunately for them, like I just turned around and like waved goodbye because the episode had passed and I was like, I got on the bus, just no problem. Like bye mom, bye dad, and off I went. So I don't remember really clearly if there were other episodes. My mom could probably tell you if she came on, if she still remembers. I think that she's also been through a lot of stuff because she had another kid who had more severe PANS than me at an earlier age. And that ended up taking over a lot of her life. So I don't know how much she would really remember. The next thing I really remember, though, was the urinary incontinence that came up when I was in first grade. And I was a obviously fully potty trained kid. And I just like completely lost control of my bladder multiple times in inappropriate places. It wasn't even overnight. It was like in school. I remember so clearly when it happened in school. And there was another time, and I think there were times beyond this, but these two just stand out in my mind because another one was friend's minivan on the way home from like a brownie meeting. And I was so embarrassed and I didn't say anything to anybody. And like, I just stayed in my wet pee pants like the rest of the time because I was so humiliated that this had happened. And I had no no sensation that it was happening. It was just like, oh, I am suddenly wet. And I had a lot of like weird sensations in my genital area for a very long period of time, you know, with my mom ended up taking me to the doctor and like trying to see if like had any like anything going on down there. And there was nothing that was going on. I think there was just, you know, the PANS having a flare of things. I had lots of episodes with like anger and irritability. I mean, I was kind of a rage filled kid. I had, you know, a lot of anxiety too. So I would, I remember going to sleep at night and my parents attributed it to unsolved mysteries. Do you remember unsolved mysteries, Jody, from when we were little kids?
I absolutely do.
Yeah. So they attributed it to unsolved mysteries, but it was extra, right? It was, I go to bed certain that whoever was on unsolved mysteries was hiding in my bedroom to kill me that night. And like, I would have these intrusive thoughts about all the ways they were going to kill me. And it usually involved that they were hiding under my bed and they were going to stab me through my mattress, no matter how they actually, like whatever they had done, that was always the thing. And so I had a lot of intrusive thoughts about that would give me a lot of fear at night. I had a lot of fear about fire too. And like, I was constantly trying to prepare myself, but like hope against fire because we lived in one of those houses, like a raised ranch so it was like a 1.5 story jump out of a window. And I was always so afraid that I was going to have to jump out of my window to save myself from a fire in the middle of the night. And then I was going to get really hurt. And I remember seeing static in my sheets, like when you'd like lift it up and seeing like the static sparks. And I was certain that was going to cause a fire. And it caused like so much panic. I had a hard time falling asleep and I would just lay in bed at night, every night, so afraid of how I was going
to
die.
And were you telling your parents about all of these different things or did you just keep it to yourself?
I must have told them because my parents eventually made me stop watching Unsolved Mysteries. And I know for sure I told my parents that there was a fire starting when I saw the sparks. And they just reassured me and they said, no, that's fine. That's not going to start a fire. And I knew that they were absolutely wrong because I saw it. I saw a spark and sparks are what would start a fire. So they were clearly wrong. And I was on my own to figure this out. And like, I just had to be prepared to jump out of a window. I had a lot of those anxieties. I had little bouts with like compulsions to, you know, redo certain things or like, you know, count certain things. So some mild OCD. It was never like a really profound OCD that I had. I don't know about tics, to be perfectly honest. My mom doesn't have a clear recollection of that. So I don't know about tics. But I definitely had rage. And like, I mean, it was bad enough that at one point I threw one of my brothers down the stairs. And when we moved out of the house that I lived in when I was younger, my parents had to replace basically all of the doors in the house because I had kicked or punched holes in all of them. So, and it would come in episodes. It would come, you know, like ups and downs, right? Like I was not always the rage-filled kid. Like sometimes I was the perfect child and I was a great kid and, you know, yeah. So it would definitely come in spurts, and that I don't know exactly what caused the spurts, with one exception, which was when I was 8. I had my tonsils removed because I had they're enlarged. They didn't do all the work I don't think that they ever did a sleep study with me, like they did with Avery. So I'm, you know, back in the day we didn't do that. We're just like, oh, they're big, just yank them out, like line them up. Does everybody want their tonsils out? Sure. It was an adenoids removed, and I was 8. Just because they were really big. And so within like 2 weeks of getting my tonsils taken out, I ended up getting walking pneumonia, with mycoplasma pneumonia. Then my grades started to go down. And I had always been the smart kid in the class, the top of the class, probably in that point, probably the smartest one in my class in that elementary school. And suddenly I was having reading comprehension issues and I couldn't do math. And I was having a hard time with coloring and being neat with my coloring and, all those kinds of things that we see with the cognitive regressions that occur. Yeah. It passed and I got through it. I don't know if I've ever told you this part, Jody, during that time when I had the walking pneumonia, the mycoplasma, I was being treated with amoxicillin and I found out that I was allergic to it. So I had this massive immune response going on between trying to fight off this bacterial infection and then having an allergic reaction to the medication, hives and rashes and everything everywhere. And so, I was a hot mess.
I thought you were going to say you got better, but
no, it made you worse. It made me worse.
Of course, because you have the luck of a Pan's kid.
Yeah. So, and my mom wasn't watching for these things and watching for, if I was better from antibiotics or whatever. So I don't know for sure. But I do know that happened, that I had the allergy show up while I was also in the middle of this really big thing. And so, I still had ups and downs and stuff, especially rage would just show up when it wanted to. And then as I got older, when I got into puberty, which is a time when things shift for a lot of Pan's kids, that especially if they're not treated or not treated with homeopathy and addressing the susceptibility, I had a shift to more moodiness and there was a lot more depression that would show up. And then by the time I was 16, I got taken to see a psychiatrist because my depression had gotten so bad because I was coming home from school and I was just sleeping for hours. I would wake up to eat. I might do my homework, might not. Again, top of the class kind of person that's suddenly not doing homework, not interested, doesn't care if I'm not going to get a good grade, if I'm not doing the thing. I just can't bring myself to do it. And so my mom took me to see a psychiatrist. Psychiatrist diagnosed me with severe clinical depression and then put me on an SSRI. And the SSRI did not do so well with me. It sent me through the roof. And suddenly I had all of the energy in the world. I was hyperactive. I couldn't focus. Anger was coming up more. And so they labeled that eventually, 8 years later when I got help again, they labeled that as mania. But that's also a way that kids will sometimes respond to SSRIs if they have PANS, especially if it's a very high dose, because I was given a very high dose of this particular medication.
I can't imagine how must that have made you feel? Number one, having episodes that were there, but not always there. And then all of a sudden having this diagnosis, then being put on a medication that made you feel even worse.
Well, I thought it made me feel better because I wasn't depressed anymore, right? So I didn't have any context for that. I was just I thought, so having the episodes, I was okay, well, especially when it was just rage, I was everybody's just being a jerk. Everybody's just this isn't me. They're all just being terrible, right? Because I was also young. And so I just thought it was my brothers were jerks or my parents were being mean or something was unfair. And it wasn't my fault that I was angry and kicking holes in doors. They should just be better to me. When I did get the medication, I was like, okay, so I'm crazy is what you're saying. I'm crazy. I have to go see a psychiatrist. And so that was really hard as a 16-year-old. And I, got dragged to therapists on a weekly basis and never said a word to the guy. I just basically sat there and I was like, this is awkward. I'm not going to talk to you. So it was pointless, really, to send me the medication. I felt better in that I didn't feel depressed anymore. But now I was crazy in another way that I thought was fun. And I was like, oh, great. This is just me. And I clearly don't need this antidepressant because look at me. I'm doing great. And so I stopped taking the medication on my own. I just quit it and had more ups and downs. And every time I'd come back, I'm like, oh, crap, it's back. And then I would just do something. I would I'd make a big change. The next time it came back really intensely, I was 18 and I was studying chemical engineering at Ohio State. And I was, I'd basically started as a sophomore because of all of the AP classes I did and testing and everything. I tested like really like higher up. So I started as a sophomore. And I was a young sophomore too, because I graduated when I wasn't even 18 yet when I graduated high school. I was 17. And so I was in like the mix of all of this, like really intense course of study, and I honestly tried to fail a class and didn't, because I wanted to like be able to retake it and have it like taken off of my transcript. So I tried to fail a calculus class, and everybody else apparently failed it worse because I didn't fail it. So the curve bumped me up so that I passed. And I just was feeling like overwhelmed and frustrated and like getting really depressed again. And so I quit school and I joined the Navy. And so like I think it was responsible for some very important changes that happened in my life that might not have come had I been in a more stable place, because everything led me to where I am now, and I wouldn't change where I am now. But it definitely made me feel like a crazy person at the time.
Drastic life-changing choices.
Yes. Yeah. Like I was like, I quit school, joined the Navy. I was like, I don't want to do chemical engineering. I don't know what I want to do with my life yet. I'm only 18. How are you asking me to figure this out? So I just chose what was like the opposite of that for the Navy. And I became a linguist. I became an Arabic linguist, and, you know, had lots of ups and downs in the military too. And every time I'd come back, I always thought that like, you know, me and like what people later called symptomatic hypomania or mania, I thought that was just me being me, and depression was me when I was sick. And so I eventually got to a depression that was bad enough that I couldn't pull out of it. Like it would fluctuate over time, like bipolar does, but also like PANS does, right? And so I eventually got into a depression that was bad enough that I couldn't pull myself out of, and I was suicidal at that point. And so I reached out to the doctor, and I got in urgently, and they went through my whole history and then said, oh, all of those times when you responded poorly to an SSRI and you had those fluctuations in your mood, that's bipolar disorder. And so I got that label and slapped on me, and I got put on a mood stabilizer. I put on lithium and another antidepressant and a sleep medicine, and it made me so dull and like brain dead. This time I actually didn't try to fail a class, but I did. I ended up getting a D in a class, and I had to retake it because I'd gotten started on this medication and I could not think. It felt like I was like sludge brain. And I couldn't think, and I had to, I didn't stand up for myself. I of course blamed myself for everything. I was like, I just have to do this. And I didn't go and ask for support or ask for a medical withdrawal or anything like that. I just pushed through because I was in the military, and that's what you do. You drive on, right? I was in the military at the same time that I was going to through my undergrad. So I was doing them simultaneously. And so I ended up failing that class and had a lot more ups and downs as I went on and off of medications, because the medications made me feel horrible. They destroyed my thyroid. Like they had all sorts of side effects, and I felt crazy on them and I felt crazy off of them, but the crazy off of them felt, I at least got breaks from it. Like when I was on it, I felt crazy all the time. If I was off of it, I got breaks from the crazy. It just was, I couldn't predict when it was going to come about. So I eventually on and stayed on because I decided to go to naturopathic medical school. And I actually decided at some point, you know, like a year into the Navy, I decided I wanted to be a doctor. And so I was doing pre-med while I was an Arabic linguist fighting two wars, basically, in military intelligence. It was intense. It was like a lot of stuff going on. And I'm grateful in many ways that I was unmedicated, because I wouldn't have been able to do that if I was. But
yeah, I was about to say, I have no idea how you managed all of that school and life in general with the ups and downs. Like what it just, that must have been a lot of weight on your shoulders.
It was, looking back on it. I didn't realize it at the time, or I just felt like it was, you know, it was what I got. You know, at one point I remember saying that I must have done something horrible in a past life, like kill the Dalai Lama or something, because I felt like I was being punished in this life for something that like I hadn't actually done. So, I mean, there were definitely times that it was very, very hard and very heavy. And so there were times I couldn't do anything, and I would just have to rely on that bounce back, and like the times that I could do everything. And that's what got me through, is the times that I could do everything made up for the times that I couldn't do anything. So eventually went to So I got my diagnosis actually like about 6 months before I graduated from University of Maryland and got out of the Navy. It was actually simultaneously. I got out of the Navy 3 weeks before I graduated. And so getting this diagnosis, I was like, okay, now this is like legit crazy. I thought I was crazy before with depression. This is legit crazy. You can't be a doctor if you're crazy. So I guess I have to take some time and like reassess. And I took a step back. I actually worked as an ABA therapist for about 6 months and was exploring the possibility of going into psychology and like, you know, something in that realm, because I wanted to help people who had suffered like me and who were getting like treatment, quote unquote treatment, but that treatment didn't make them actually feel very good. It just, you know, made them maybe a little bit less concerning to the people around them. And so I ended up getting recruited back to working as an Arabic linguist and in the intelligence community for another 4 years, which was great because it gave me a little bit more time to figure things out. And I realized, okay, I am stable. It gave me a couple of years to see I'm stable. I'm obviously trustworthy with a security clearance. And so this is not a problem, big picture. If I can be stable, I can figure out how to do this. And so I started studying for my MCATs and studying for, you know, getting ready to apply to medical schools. And then I stumbled across naturopathic medicine, realized that this is actually what I was trying to figure out how to do, because I wanted to figure out how to help people not be so burdened by their medications, or help people out without needing to use the medications that were causing so many side effects and so many symptoms for me and that I'd seen in other people as well. And then I finally ended up deciding to go to naturopathic medical school instead of conventional medical school, because naturopathic medicine had it already there. Like, it was already conventional plus natural in one program, instead of having to do like, you know, a ton of work on like piecemeal it together on my own. And it was in naturopathic medical school that I first learned about homeopathy. And this is like, I almost quit. I think I've told you this many, many times. You've probably heard this a bazillion times, right?
Yes.
I almost quit naturopathic medical school when I found out about homeopathy, because homeopathy made no sense to me, with it being such dilute forms of medicine. And, you know, how am I going to give people nothing and help them get better, especially with what I wanted to do with helping people who had psychiatric illness to get better? And it wasn't until my psychiatrist at the VA, because I'm a disabled veteran, it wasn't until my psychiatrist at the VA told me that the only way I could have a family was to adopt or get electroconvulsive therapy or shock therapy. And it's like, you know, ridiculous, right? When I had never been hospitalized, like I was stable and able to maintain a job at a high level. I was trusted with government secrets, you know, like, and suddenly I'm being told I need to get shock therapy. And I was like, well, that doesn't sound like a good idea. Not really what I want to do, because, you know, there's a lot of implications. Like, it really affects memory and cognition when you get shock therapy. And so I happened to be going to a conference where somebody was presenting on homeopathy for bipolar disorder. And I decided to give it a try, because this sounds crazy. Homeopathy sounds crazy, but not as crazy as sending electrical currents through my brain. So worst case scenario, it fails and I go back to being on medications and I start looking at, you know, what the adoption process is if I want to have children. So as I said in a previous episode, I was so fortunate that like I'm actually a really fast responder and I respond really well. And homeopathy proved very quickly to be very powerful. But I didn't trust it right away. And I was a really bad patient, honestly, because I was still on medication. I was still on lithium and I was so suppressing all of my symptoms. And so I relatively quickly leaned myself off of the medication, because I was like, how do I know what's doing what if I'm using this plus this? And so, of course, I sent myself into an absolute tailspin because I stopped taking the medication. And so I just spun myself way up, didn't even realize that I was in a state and an episode, and just was fortunate that I'd already had an appointment scheduled with my doctor. And he said, okay, I think that you're manic right now. I need you to take another dose of your remedy, because I wasn't taking a daily dose. So I need you to take another dose of your remedy and we'll have an appointment again next week. And again, I'm a very fast responder. Not everybody responds the way I do, but within 2 hours, I was calmer from that dose and I was able to go and sit still at dinner. Whereas like in class before, I was like pacing back and forth. I could not sit still. I was ready to quit school and move to Nicaragua for some reason. I don't know why Nicaragua. And just like saying some really off the wall, very bizarre things, because I was feeling things and I wanted to feel all of the stuff at once. So fortunately, like I said, I responded really well and I didn't go back on medications. I just managed things with the ups and downs. But after I saw how powerful it was, I said, okay, I need to figure out how to use this. My healing journey was not fast. I mean, most PANDAS kids are working with their providers for a couple of years before they can go to as needed. For me, it took a little over five before I was like really basically fully healed and could just use things as needed when something showed up. And it wasn't an easy process. Like the start was really easy, but the middle was so messy.
I want to know how did you stick with it? What you ask me this all the time. What made you stay? What made you stay with it? What made you stick with it?
Stubbornness was one. It helped that I had seen the improvements early on. And I was like, well, if I've been there once, I can be there again. Like this can work for me. But I definitely had a lot of times that I was like year three and year four. I had an awful lot of times when I was needing to change a remedy every week. I was getting like a little bit of improvement and then I would fall back again and a little bit of improvement and fall back again. Or sometimes it wouldn't work at all if it just was the right remedy wasn't selected. And I definitely had times I was like, am I just the person that this isn't going to work for? Is this, you know, and I had doubts too. Like, is homeopathy even really a thing? Was this all in my mind before that I was getting better? And so there was some aspect of stubbornness that kept me there. And I think the other part was like, well, what else are my options? I could go back on this medication that I feel terrible on. I'd tried other things too. I'd tried dietary changes. I'd tried supplements. I'd tried lots of things. Nothing else worked. This is the only thing that like ever had given me relief and like relief in a way that I felt better and stable, but still felt like me. And so I think that that's one was like, what else do I have? I don't really have anything else. And I've seen something, so I know I can get there again. And so just sheer stubbornness kept me going at it. But it was really hard because I had two major regressions in those like my fourth year of treatment. I had two massive, massive regressions. And I felt like I was back to the beginning. Like, you know, I had a really intense episode that, you know, was of course at the time labeled as mania. And you could still label it as mania, you know, where, I mean, I even had some psychotic symptoms show up that I, you know, like my distortions of like the world around me, like my visual distortions and that kind of thing. Like it didn't match up with what was really happening. And another suicidal depression came up as well. And so of course that was devastating to me. I'm like, how am I having the worst manic episode I've ever had? And a really, you know, just as bad as my last suicidal depression. How am I having this come up again after all of these years of treatment? But the reality is that within a year of that was when I was done and like recovered and to the point that like I met my husband within a year of that and he has never seen me have an episode. And so it's one of those things that, and we'll talk about this in future episodes where we talk more about the specifics of homeopathy, but sometimes you have like a PANS kid. I don't really see this in other conditions so much, but PANS kids oftentimes have a big drop back so that it's like the last hurrah from the body to show, here's what I got. Here's what my susceptibility encompasses. Do something with this to get a remedy to like catapult healing to like that next level. So that's my story. Is there any part of it that you remember that I missed out? Because it's, you know, we're both having a hard time remembering all the things from our stories and trying to tell them succinctly. So I'm sure that we'll both remember things as we're continuing through this podcast.
Yeah. I don't think anything specifically that I remember. I think it's just so every time you tell your story, a little bit different of a way, a little bit different time, like different age. But you literally went through the exact same thing that Avery went through as far as like the symptoms, the ups, the downs, the things not working for her, you know, the just not the right meds or not the right result that you were looking for. And then that process of, you know, figuring out that, you know, or maybe opening up your mind to homeopathy, but also still, and this is one thing that I really super appreciate is, you know, your what's the word I'm looking for? Your doubt of homeopathy. What I'm missing the word.
Oh, my skepticism.
Skepticism. There you go. Your skepticism. I feel like that is part of what kept me going was that like, I felt like Avery was the one that this wasn't going to work for. And I had doubt about homeopathy, but you had doubt about homeopathy too. And it worked for you. It worked well for you. So it just, there's so much, like I just relate because I see in your story, I see what happened with Avery too. And it's, I'm super, super grateful. I hate that it like breaks my heart listening to you talk about all of those things that happened when you were younger and when you were unwell. But it was literally what walked you right to us as the PANS community. And thank
well,
you opened your mind up to homeopathy.
I am so grateful that I opened my mind up to homeopathy. And I still have times where I'm skeptical and I'm like, really? And you know, there's more and more research, and we'll do an episode about research and things that we understand about how homeopathy works and like more things that we're learning about it as we learn more. But there's still that part of me, like my undergrad is in physiology and neurobiology. So it is, there's still part of me that like, I want to understand what's actually happening in the body with homeopathy, why it's effective. But the scientist in me, you know, the kid who went to summer science camps, you know, like I can't ignore that, like with the scientific method, that if we apply this one thing, this one change, and we see these changes that come and it's repeatable, it's due to the homeopathy. It's not coincidence, right? Yeah. And it took me actually working with the PANS community and working with a lot of people in the PANS community. You know, first, the universe sent PANS to me and PANS mom sent more PANS to me. And it was through that working with the community and talking to the moms and talking to the kids and recognizing like, I get what you're experiencing. I've had that too. And then conversations with my mom where I put all of that together because I had just accepted that my diagnosis was bipolar disorder and that's what I had. And that was just whatever mechanism we finally, eventually, maybe someday learn is happening in bipolar disorder. I think we're actually going to figure out it's all PANS, right? Someday we're going to figure out a lot of mental health conditions are actually immunological conditions. And so it was through talking with my mom and realizing first, actually, that my brother had PANS because he had a very clear onset, suddenly very afraid he was going to die, would not sleep alone, taking over things with my parents, and like also a very smart kid that suddenly wouldn't go to school and wouldn't do his work, and like just all of the things that you typically see with a PANS kid. So he was the sudden rapid onset, very characteristic, very clear. I was the like gradual little points over time that sort of in retrospect you can look at and be like, oh, that all makes sense now together as one picture of what's going on. I'm grateful that I got an opportunity to learn from the community and that the universe kept sending PANS to me. And I'm even more grateful that I did open my mind to homeopathy because I have a little girl now. And so it felt like it came full circle that like hopes of her is what led me to be willing to try homeopathy. And now she's here. And because PANS can have a tendency to run in families, I am aware that my daughter is susceptible to PANS. And so I have to continue. I have to continue the fight because you know, I could be your kids. Your family is my family. My kid could be your kid someday. And I'm hoping that I need to, you know, I can do everything I can to keep her healthy and to keep all of these kiddos healthy, because I think that ultimately there's a gift for all of the kids who've experienced PANS and who get to recover and come out on the other end, like there was for me. I don't know. They're not all necessarily going to go on to become homeopaths that are healing PANS. They might not even do anything in the PANS community, but they're going to be able to do things that they never could have done if they were on suppressive psychiatric medications and things that just like dull them down or that only sort of work, and that they're still paralyzed by their fears and their OCD and their anger and their tics and, you know, all of the things that would prevent them from going about living a typical life. And I just can't wait to see what's going to happen with all of these kids. I personally think that the PANS kids are going to save the world.
Oh, yeah. The PANS moms are going to teach the world, and then the kids are going to save the world.
So that's my story. I think we'll wrap for here, unless you've got other questions for me, Jody.
No, I don't. Just thank you for telling your story. I can't help but think that there will be an adult or two that listen to this and make some connections for themselves. And I feel like there's so many adults, even like in my direct connection, that I'm like, okay, well, I see those diagnoses, but then, you know, there's these other pieces. And I think that happens for so many of us, that we stumble onto this PANS thing, and then all of a sudden it's like, those things happened to me. Okay, maybe I wasn't like an ADD mess kiddo. Maybe I wasn't like this and that and all of these labels that I have carried for so many years. Maybe that was something else. So my hopes is that, you know, someone gets to listen to this and learn from you and your story.
Maybe someday you'll tell your story too, Jody, since you're one of those parents who realized some things about yourself as you were going through the process. In our upcoming episodes, we're going to talk more about the specific journey of homeopathy that Jody and Avery went through and give you a lot more nitty-gritty details about what healing with homeopathy looks like and do some teaching about how to navigate your own healing with homeopathy. And we'll dive into more specific topics about navigating life with pandas and pandas with their with your kids, with your spouse, with your family as a whole, and all things related to healing pans and pandas. So we'll see you guys on the next episode.
Bye, guys.
We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We would love to connect with you on social media and have you as part of our amazing community. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Homeopathy for Pans and Pandas.
If Facebook isn't your thing, you can also connect with us on Instagram and YouTube by searching for Resilience Naturopathic or clicking the links in our show notes. You can also visit our website, resiliencenaturopathic.com.
As always, we value your partnership in advocacy and education. Your support through following, sharing, rating, and reviewing our podcast is crucial in our mission to teach the world about PANS, pandas, and homeopathy. So if you found this podcast helpful, please leave us a review. Together, we are making a difference.
And finally, this podcast really is for you. Your questions and feedback help us make sure we are answering the right questions so you can feel confident making the next right step for your kids. Send us your questions or request guests by emailing us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com, also linked in the show notes.